Blog Talk Radio.
Through early morning fog I see visions of the things to be, the pains that are withheld for me. I realize and I can see that suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please. The game of life is hard to play. I'm gonna lose it anyway. The losing card I'll someday lay. So this is all I have to say. Suicide is painless.
Suicide.
It brings on many changes.
Changes.
And I can take or leave it if I please. The sword of time will pierce our skin. It doesn't hurt. On in, the pain grows stronger, watch it breathe. Suicide is painless, it brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please. A brave man once requested me that are key. Is it to be or not to be? And I replied, oh, why ask me? Suicide is painless. It brings on many changes. And I can take or leave it if I please. And you can do the same thing if you please.
Yes. The conservatives have gradually come to a dim realization of the weakness in their position, of the philosophical flaws that had to be corrected. But the means by which they are attempting to correct it are worse than the original weakness. There are three interrelated arguments used by today's conservatives to justify capitalism, which can best be designated as the argument from faith, the argument from tradition, the argument from depravity. Sensing their need of a moral base, many conservatives decided to choose religion as their moral justification. They are claiming that freedom, capitalism, and America are based on faith in God. Politically, such a claim contradicts the fundamental principles of the United States. In America, religion is a private matter and must not be brought into political issues. Intellectually, to rest one's case on faith is to concede that reason is on the side of one's enemies, to concede that there are no rational arguments to support the ideas which created this country, no rational justification for freedom, justice, property, individual rights, and they can be accepted only on faith. Consider the implications of that attempt. While the communists are claiming that they are the champions of reason and science, the conservatives concede it and retreat into the realm of mysticism, into another world, surrendering this world to communism. It is the kind of victories that communist irrational ideology could never have won on its own merits. Now consider a second argument. the attempt to justify capitalism on the ground of tradition. Some people declare that to be a conservative means to uphold the status quo, the given, the established, regardless of what it might be, regardless of whether it is good or bad, right or wrong, defensible or indefensible. They declare that we must defend the American political system not because it is right, but because our ancestors chose it. Not because it is good, but because it is old. America was created by men who broke with all political traditions and originated a system unprecedented in history, relying on nothing but the unaided power of their own intellect. But those neoconservatives are now trying to tell us that America was the product of faith in revealed truth and of uncritical respect for the traditions of the past. It is certainly irrational to use the new as a standard of value, to believe that an idea or a policy is good merely because it is new. But it is much more preposterously irrational to use the old as a standard of value, to claim that an idea or a policy is good merely because it is ancient. The liberals are constantly asserting that they represent the future, that they are new, progressive, forward-looking, etc. And they denounce the conservatives as old-fashioned representatives of a dead past. The conservatives conceded and thus helped the liberals to propagate one of today's most grotesque contradictions. Collectivism and dictatorship, the frozen status society, is offered to us in the name of progress, while capitalism, the only free, dynamic, creative society ever devised, is defended in the name of passivity and stagnation. The plea to preserve tradition as such appeals to the worst elements in men and rejects the best. It appeals to fear, cowardice, conformity, self-doubt, and rejects creativeness, originality, independence, self-reliance. It is an outrageous plea to address to human beings anywhere, but the more outrageous here in America, the country based on the principle that man must stand on his own feet, live by his own judgment, and move constantly forward as a productive, creative innovator.
Today's date, August 22nd. My, how time flies. 2011 AD. Beautiful Washington, D.C. today. The United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. It's been an interesting day. It appears that Gaddafi is going to be toppled, and I wonder how long it's going to take for Barack Obama, our president, to claim victory, to take credit for the events that are taking place. Even though we did not lead in this effort, in fact, Barack Obama took great pains to franchise out this or outsource this adventure. Nicolas Sarkozy, a Frenchman, a damn Frenchman, has taken charge. It's talking tough. A Frenchman, do you hear me? A Frenchman talking tough, taking charge. While our president gets a tan and golfs, Hillary Clinton stands tall and chubby at the podium, looking and sounding very presidential, while our president bicycles and has a tasty ice cream cone and bathes in the warm waters off of Martha's Vineyard. All around the world, hell is breaking loose. And our president, he's just chilling. It's all good. Is this what the hope and change we voted for? The backseat role? Obama's playing basketball. Playing basketball, riding a bike, chilling. He's just having a great time. He's not sweating the presidency at all or anything that's going on in the world. It's interesting. The national debt is up $4 trillion under President Obama. And Maxine Waters has come out and said the Tea Party can go straight to hell. Straight to hell. When Maxine Waters came out and made that statement, a lot of folks were upset about it. A lot of folks were very unhappy and displeased that she would use that kind of language. But here, I think differently about it. Can I tell you what I think? I'll tell you. I think that when Maxine Waters uses that kind of talk, she's clearly frazzled. Clearly, the Tea Party has gotten under her skin and hit the nail on the proverbial head. The Tea Party has spoken, and Maxine has heard the Tea Party. But what of this rhetoric about, or this idea that we should tone down the rhetoric, that we should quite possibly, you know, keep quiet about these things? Let's not get all, you know, talking crazy about, you know, other folks. Why don't we, let's be civil. No. That only applies if you're a Republican. Obama's blaming Congress. He's blaming ATMs, the internet. He's blaming tsunamis. He's blaming my barking dog. Everybody. Is this the hope and change you voted for, folks? Is this what you asked for? Is this what we can expect? Is this what we're looking for in a president? Yeah. It's been said that George Bush took more vacation time during his presidency at this point than Obama has so far. But really, were we living in so tough economic times during the Bush presidency, the same sort of tough economic times? Not hardly. It's a different situation here. But tonight I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about our post-American president, the socialist America, and socialism under President Obama. Because that's where we are right now. But before we get to that point, I want to go ahead and play this clip because Maxine Waters has been all over the news all day long. And I don't have the clip of her telling the Tea Party to go straight to hell. I'm sure you've all heard it already. You heard it. So I'm going to play a different clip because this is telling the Tea Party to go to hell. Well, of course, we expect that. But did you expect
this
year?
President Obama wrapped up his three-day Midwest jobs tour. There are some signs that African Americans, a group critical to his reelection, are starting to run out of patience. At a sometimes heated town hall meeting in Detroit, members of the Congressional Black Caucus got an earful from frustrated residents who want more to be done to help tackle the nearly 16% unemployment rate in the black community.
The Congressional Black Caucus loves the president too. We're supportive of the president, but we're getting tired of him. Getting tired. When you tell us it's all right and you unleash us and you tell us you're ready for us to have this conversation, we're ready to have the conversation. When you let us know it is time to let go, we'll let go.
The Congressional Black Caucus must meet immediately with the President of the United States of America.
Well, I'm joined now by MSNBC contributor, journalist, and publisher Karen Hunter, and by Robert Trainum, Washington Bureau Chief for the Comcast Network and host of Roll Call TV with Robert Trainum.
What guarantees are you going to give this liberal about how that will reduce the cost of gasoline at the pump if we let you drill where you say you want to drill?
I can guarantee to the American people, because of the inaction of the United States Congress, ever increasing prices unless the demand comes down, and the $5 will look like a very low price in the years to come if we are prohibited from finding new reserves, new opportunities to increase supplies.
And guess what this liberal would be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing, would be about basically taking over and the government running all of your companies.
Democrat Maxine Waters there looking for the
All right. So when Maxine Waters said that she wanted to be unleashed, I could run with that. I really could. And Representative Conyers and Maxine Waters, noted socialist, made numerous socialist statements. So when they talk about being wanting to meet with the president and being dissatisfied with what the president is doing, do you think it means socialism? Do you think it means that they want the president to act in the best interest of the black community right now? Because we've seen that the black community is suffering from depression level unemployment. 16.2%, some say 17, some say 20. The official number is 17.2%. 9.2% overall. The folks in the black community elected this president. They went to vote for him in record numbers, expecting to get something for nothing, I presume. Oh, high self-esteem. The fact that a so-called black man had been elected president. They expected to have their rent paid, their mortgage paid. They expected free money, Obama money. They expected socialism. They expected a free ride. Most black folks who voted for President Obama expected a second emancipation. They expected 40 acres and a mule. No, probably 80 acres and a Cadillac. And a house on the hill. And a yacht. And free Obama money for as long as he reigns. That's what black folks were expecting. Socialism. Socialism on steroids under this president. That's what they were expecting, and they're not getting it. I think a lot of black folks are saying, what is it? What is the good of electing a black man president if you don't get something for nothing? Where's ours? Where's mine? My own brother, as I've told you many times, is unemployed right now. Still. He and I spoke on the phone once again last week, and he railed on and on for half an hour about how he voted for President Obama and he hasn't gotten his job. Why doesn't he have a job? If a black man is in office, why doesn't he have a job? He expected when he went to vote for President Obama to be living on Easy Street right now, either through his own labor or at the expense of someone else's. He freely admits that. And lately there's been a lot of debate about President Obama's underlying political ideology. Is he a communist? Is he a fascist? Is he a socialist or something else, something in between? Because Obama rose to power like a typical Marxist by organizing the urban poor, poor folks, and ideologues. His original support was probably strongest among unemployed recipients of government handouts. And we have my brother and many other blacks. You've heard you've seen the YouTube videos. You've heard the folks in Detroit asking for free money, Obama money. You've heard the old poor black lady who all she wanted was a new house or a new kitchen. I forget which it is, but it was one of those. And of course, the young lady who attended a Obama rally with her children, stating that if Obama takes care of me, I'm going to take care of him. I won't have to worry about my mortgage. I won't have to worry about my car note. I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. If I take care of him, he's going to take care of me. Those were her exact words. Folks are asking, where's mine? Are you asking, where's yours? Folks are asking, where's mine? We elected a socialist black man in office. He's supposed to be for the people. Where's mine? And those elitists, those intellectuals who claim to advocate for those black folks, typically of Marxist vintage. Obama also continues to express Amerophobia and fervent internationalism. So Obama's sympathies and his origins are Marxist. He also continues to express both, an international zeal. He's not the president of the United States. I think Obama seeks to be president of the world. World president. The United States to him is small potatoes. One small part of the economic globe. But it may help you to consider the similarities and the differences between a communist and a fascist. Because a lot of people really don't know what the differences are. And that's why you have me and a lot of other blog talk radio hosts. Both Marxist and fascist are statist who favor big government. Sound familiar? Both begin with powerful, charismatic leaders who want to run all-powerful central governments. This is not my opinion. This is fact, because we've seen it over the course of history, haven't we? Time and time again. Caesar. Every single king of the UK. Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini, and on and on and on. And another similarity, both Marxists and fascists want to destroy the middle class, the owners of small businesses, middle management, professionals, and skilled technicians, and workers. Middle class folks are independent and mostly responsible people. They resent the burden of government regulations and taxes. They want the freedom to work hard to improve their own lives and the lives of their children. And yet, at least in America, those who see themselves as middle class usually don't believe in big government and the welfare state. In short, both Marxist and fascist want charismatic leaders to take over the government and to strengthen its power. And in order to accomplish these ends, both Marxist and fascist try to suppress a vigorous middle class. That's why Obama wants energy prices to necessarily skyrocket. That's why Obama, when this administration, not just Obama, but this overall administration, seeks to regulate, it says they want to tax the wealthy, the millionaires and billionaires. That's what we've been hearing for the last year and a half. Those millionaires and billionaires are now the administration's thrown in those corporate jet owners. And now, every time you hear a liberal pundit speak, he speaks in terms of millionaires and billionaires. But what they really mean, folks, is those people making $250,000 or more. But it sounds better to say millionaires and billionaires, but really that's what they mean. So what of these millionaires and billionaires? Those folks making $250,000 or more, those are considered to be middle class. Tax these people. All right, we're going to take a short break. Take a listen to this clip. Tell me what you think. Please do call in. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Listen to this. Tell me what you think of it.
Let's move ahead. How does your philosophy translate itself into the world of politics? Now, one of the principal achievements of this country in the past 20 years particularly, I think most people agree, is the gradual growth of social protective legislation based on the principle that we are our brother's keepers. How do you feel about the political trends of the United States, the Western world?
The way everybody feels, except more consciously. I feel that it is terrible, that you see destruction all around you, and that you are moving toward disaster until and unless all those welfare state conceptions have been reversed and rejected. It is precisely these trends which are bringing the world to disaster, because we are now moving towards complete collectivism or socialism, a system under which everybody is enslaved to everybody. And we are moving that way only because of our altruist morality.
Yes, but you say everybody is enslaved to everybody. Yet this came about democratically. A free people in a free country voted for this kind of government, wanted this kind of legislation. Do you object to the democratic process?
I object to the idea that people have the right to vote on everything. The traditional American system was a system based on the idea that majority will prevail only in public or political affairs, and that it was limited by inalienable individual rights. Therefore, I do not believe that a majority can vote a man's life or property or freedom away from him. Therefore, I do not believe that if a majority votes on any issue, that this makes the issue right. It doesn't.
All right. Then how do we arrive at action? How should we arrive at action?
By voluntary consent, voluntary cooperation of free men, unforced.
And how do our leaders arrive? How do we arrive at our leadership? Who elects? Who appoints?
The whole people elects. There is nothing wrong with the democratic process in politics. We arrive at it the way we arrived by the American Constitution as it used to be. By the constitutional process as we had it, people elect officials, but the powers of those officials, the powers of government, are strictly limited. They will have no right to initiate force or compulsion against any citizen except a criminal. Those who have initiated force will be punished by force, and that is the only proper function of government. What we would not permit is the government to initiate force against people who have hurt no one, who have not forced anyone. We would not give the government or the majority or any minority the right to take the life or the property of others. That was the original American system.
When you say take the property of others, I imagine that you're talking now about taxes.
Yes, I am.
And you believe that there should be no right by the government to tax. You believe that there should be no such thing as welfare legislation, unemployment compensation, regulation during times of stress, certain kinds of rent controls and things like that.
That's right. I'm opposed to all forms of control. I am for an absolute, laissez-faire, free, unregulated economy. Let me put it briefly. I'm for the separation of state and economics. Just as we had separation of state and church, which led to peaceful coexistence among different religions after a period of religious wars, so the same applies to economics. If you separate the government from economics, if you do not regulate production and trade, you will have peaceful cooperation and harmony and justice among men.
You are certainly enough of a political scientist to know that certain movements spring up in reaction to other movements. The labor movement, for instance, certain social welfare legislation. This did not spring full-blown from somebody's head, out of a vacuum. This was a reaction to certain abuses that were going on. Isn't that true, Ian?
Not always. It actually sprang up from the same source as the abuses. If by abuses you mean the legislation which originally had been established to help industrialists, which was already a breach of complete free enterprise. If then, in reaction...
Now, do you believe, that was Ayn Rand and Mike Wallace in a 1962 interview discussing the free market system versus that of a government-controlled market? A government's controlling the market. Now, do you believe that the government should be responsible for how corporations build and run their companies? Because Barack Obama will tell us, and those around him will say, that he is not a socialist. And they'll laugh, ha, 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 I'm not a socialist. Ha, 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 Obama's not a socialist. Ha, 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 ha. But consider the words that come from Barack Obama himself. When he says things like, the government should decide how much money you're allowed to keep. And he believes personally that at some point you've made enough money. This is the president of the United States. Who is he to decide, and why would it even be his business to even care how much money anybody makes? Think about that for a moment. When the president himself, the leader of the free world and the leader of this country, a very powerful man, tells us from his own lips that he believes that at some point we've made enough money. And at a certain point, the government should decide how much money we're allowed, that's the key word, that we're allowed to keep. What do you think of that? And lately, when the president speaks about car manufacturers, and that he says that it's his opinion that car manufacturers should stop producing trucks and SUVs and produce more fuel-efficient vehicles, that car manufacturers need to understand the market. This is a man who has never produced anything at all. Never worked for a car company that I know of. Never worked for a car manufacturer. Never worked as a marketing person on any level. One wonders, okay, let's think about this logically. Car manufacturers make SUVs and trucks because they sell and people buy them. So clearly the market dictates what's being produced. And apparently the market is still very good for SUVs and trucks. So when the president says that car manufacturers need to understand the market, what the hell is he talking about? It's this kind of stuff that makes you go, what kind of idiot am I dealing with? Or is he brilliant? Now, back to what Obama is ideological-wise. Because in order to understand where we stand with our president, we need to understand where Marxist and fascist differ. Because what we're trying to do is understand where Obama falls in these categories. He's certainly not a free market guy. That we know that he is not. So where do Marxist and fascist differ in their politically declared constituencies or power bases? And fascists tend to locate their power in the wealthy classes, especially in the leaders of large companies and industries, i.e. General Electric and Jeffrey Immelt. Now, their goal is to manage the existing economic structure from the top down. This is the surprising and shocking direction that Obama has taken since he became president of the United States of America. Because Obama built his original power base from a Marxist internationalist viewpoint, both those who claim to advocate for the poor and now safely are not safely in their political power. They helped get him into power, and they have no alternative. None whatsoever. From now on, Obama can turn his attention elsewhere, exactly as he's done. Because immediately after his election, Obama began to focus on taking control over the political establishment, and especially corporate America. He made corporate America his new constituency and doled out billions to it. Even when some companies did not want the money, he forced it on them. In that way, Obama seized control of the economic engine from the top down and made the CEOs and their boards afraid of him and dependent upon him. But the tables are turning because these companies are not hiring and thus causing Obama no end of political grief. So is Obama going to turn out to be a Marxist or fascist? Or something else? It all depends on what Obama has to do to maintain power. His long-term goal is that of all fascist or Marxist, and that is to use the government to gain as much power and as much control over the nation's citizenry as possible. It's a scary thought. Now, we often talk of entitlements in regard to government handouts. And there's another kind of entitlement that is key to understanding Obama. Because Obama's not driven by ideology as much as by his self-righteous sense of personal entitlement to run the country. Like so many statistics, he is less he's less a fascist or Marxist than a power-seeking opportunist. Like most people who feel entitled to bend and break the rules to their own advantage, optimism, opportunism, is Obama's ideology, i.e. this backdoor amnesty deal. Bending and breaking the rules. Does any of this sound familiar? Does it sound exactly like exactly what's going on here? Now, when we examine Obama's pronouncements about the need for national health care, we find a whole shifting series of justifications. Insuring the uninsured is one, then saving money, then undermining the greedy insurance companies and those fat cats. Then the even more greedy and dangerous doctors. And now a morality of caring. Beneath this political pragmatism lies something much more ominous. Obama wants to build a permanent health care bureaucracy because it's a, he wants to do it as the cutting edge of socialism. Once national health care is set in the political stone of bureaucracy, America will be transformed forever, and our great bastion of freedom will begin to crumble beneath the burden. Think about it, folks. If you think this national health care deal is a good deal, you're wrong. It's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. It's a situation where the hopes and dreams of Americans will come into deep despair. Meanwhile, the hopes for America remain with the middle class, with those hardworking, responsible people who want to change things from the way they are now with this administration. They want a chance to earn decent living and to take care of their families and community. America must vote Obama out and his supporters out of office before it's too late. Before it's too late. I have my personal primary principles, and I'd like to share them with you right now. Protect freedom is one. These are my personal principles. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. These are important to me. My credo fashioned over years, changing at times, but now, here to stay. This is our time, folks. This is our time. We need to get this party started. And I mean, Obama has got to go. We'll be right back after this brief message from my main man and yours from the great beyond. Ronald Reagan, don't say that we were not warned, because what you're about to hear right now, folks, is exactly what's happening. Think of the ominous similarities in what you're about to hear. Please listen to what you're about to hear from Ronald Reagan and tell me that what he said is some 40 years ago isn't happening right here and now. Imagine all the things that I've said about Ayn Rand, John Galt, Atlas Shrugged, all the things that were spoken about back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s are actually happening to us right now. Modern day Nostradamus, Ayn Rand, Ronald Reagan, check this out. Listen, and tell me it's not happening. We'll be right back. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report.
Back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, six times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another way, because this threat is with us, and at the moment is more imminent, more imminent, more imminent.
One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine and gave them a chance to choose,
would unhesitatingly vote against it.
We had an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States, and of course the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine,
Congressman Ferran said,
if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, then we can expand the program after that. Well, let's see what the socialists themselves have to say about it. They say, once the Ferran bill is passed, this nation will be provided with a mechanism for socialized medicine capable of indefinite expansion in every direction until it includes the entire population. Well, we can't say we haven't been warned.
James Madison, in 1788, speaking to the Virginia Convention, said, since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations.
Now, in our country, under our free enterprise system, we have seen medicine reach the greatest height that it has in any country in the world. Today, the relationship between patient and doctor in this country
is something to be envied any place.
The privacy, the care that is given to a person, the right to choose a doctor, the right to go from one doctor to the other. But let's also look from the other side at the freedom the doctor loses. The doctor begins to lose freedom.
It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another.
First, you decide that the doctor can have so many patients, they're equally divided among the various doctors by the government. But then the doctors aren't equally divided geographically. So a doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town, they already have enough doctors, you have to go someplace else. And from here, it's only a short step to dictating where he will go. This is a freedom that I wonder whether any of us have the right to take from any human being. In this country of ours took place the greatest revolution that has ever taken place in the world's history, the only true revolution. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rules for another. But here, for the first time in all the thousands of years of man's relation to man, a little group of men, the founding fathers, for the first time, established the idea that you and I had within ourselves the God-given right and ability to determine our own destiny. This freedom was built into our government with safeguards. We talk democracy today. We begin to assume the aspect of majority rule is all that is needed. Well, majority rule is a fine aspect of democracy, provided there are guarantees written in to our government concerning the rights of the individual and of the minorities. What can we do about this?
Well, you and I can do a great deal.
We can say right now that we want no further encroachment on these individual liberties and freedoms.
And that you demand
the continuation of our traditional free enterprise system.
You and I can do this.
The only way we can do it is by writing to our congressman, even if we believe that he's on our side to begin with. Write to strengthen his hand. Write those letters now. Call your friends and tell them to write. If you don't, this program, I promise you, will pass just as surely as the sun will come up tomorrow. And behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country. Until, one day, as Norman Thomas said, we will awake to find that we have socialism.
And if you don't do this, and if I do it, one of these days, you and I are going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
All right. We're back with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Ronald Reagan spoke these words back in 1963. Here we have exactly what he said happening right now. No, we don't have the public option. Not yet. But we, the socialists, the Democrats, they have their foot in the door. with this health care monstrosity. Our only hope from further encroachment into our liberties is for the Supreme Court to strike down this law. Now, a recent poll showed that 55% of Americans, 55, believe that Obama is a socialist. And many Americans believe that the nation is on the road to socialism. The road to socialism. Well, my question would be at this time, where have all those people been for the last 75 years? America has been a socialist as well as a fascist nation for many decades. If you're a student of history, you understand that. Especially since FDR's New Deal. Socialism primarily is a public ownership of wealth, property, and the means of production. So of course Obama is a socialist. He has expressed that many times in many forms, especially verbally. For some reason, many people mistakenly believe that Social Security, an important outcome of the New Deal, they believe that it is a program in which some Americans' earnings are taken and put into some kind of savings account to be available to them when they retire. In actuality, Social Security is a real-time redistribution of wealth scheme administered by the state, in which income is taken from producers and redistributed to non-producers, mainly retired persons and the elderly. LBJ's Medicare program is an extension of this. Now, think of it. My money is going into Social Security. I pay Social Security taxes, as do you if you work. That money is not going into a savings account. It's going directly to pay people who are no longer working. It's a huge pyramid scheme operated by our government. Further examples I'll cite, show that Obama is a socialist, including his vote as a U.S. senator in favor of the Wall Street bailout, often mistakenly seen as an example of capitalism, but which was actually an example of socialism, redistribution of wealth from the middle-class workers and the producers to the already rich Wall Street bankers and financial executives. Remember what Ayn Rand said about the producers, those who produce, versus the looters, those who take, who produce nothing but take, rob, if you will, from the producers. And Obama clearly supports the ongoing military socialism through the wars he's been continuing and strengthening abroad, redistribution of wealth from American workers and producers to defense contractors, consultants and lobbyists, oil executives and Wall Street bankers, which really have been a main objective of American wars throughout the last century. As the late General Smedley D. Butler, Major General, United States Marine Corps, one of my idols, would say, war is a racket. General Butler said that, one of the greatest Marines of all time. And as the late economist Murray Rothbard put it regarding World War I, he said, Woodrow Wilson's decision to enter the war may have been the single most faithful action of the 20th century. causing untold and unending misery and destruction. But Morgan profits were expanded and assured. Things have not changed, folks. Things have not changed in the last 100 years. Obama started and stated his intentions. He stated that his intentions have been to for the redistribution of wealth as a means to help the poor. Remember a radio address with WBEZ Public Radio in Chicago with Cheryl Corley, where he stated that the Supreme Court never addressed the issue of redistribution of wealth within the civil rights movement. He's all for taking from me and you, the producers, and giving to those considered to be less fortunate. The underprivileged. But his unstated intention is the same as all politicians of his ilk: to reach into as much private wealth as possible as a means toward expanding state power and control. President Obama is dangerous. President Obama is a dangerous man. He must be defeated. At this point, I don't even care if it's another Democrat. As long as the Democrat is God-fearing, believes in America, is there one? Really? Is that like an oxymoron? This guy is a dangerous cancer to this country. Now, many people mistakenly believe that Obama's medical takeover is socialized medicine. I don't. Because we already have socialized medicine in Medicare and other similar programs. Obamacare is actually a fascist program. And fascism is another major aspect of FDR's New Deal, which gave us an untold number of regulations, mandates, and so on, between business and government. Fascism primarily is state control over privately owned property, wealth, and industry. All government mandates and regulations of private economies are examples of fascism. Obamacare consists of one mandate and regulation after another of private doctor-patient relationships, patient-doctor insurance company relationships, and a laundry list of medical-related industries. If we do not halt what is happening to this country, it's going to be irreversible at some point. I mean, really. In addition to Obamacare fascism and Obama's strengthening his own executive dictatorial powers as president, some other examples of Obama's fascism include his new financial regulations and the environmental regulations that he used as a means of interfering with Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal's duty to protect the people of Louisiana from the oil spill that threatened their livelihoods. You remember that. While allowing doctors' practices, HMOs, and insurance companies to continue to be privately owned, the federal government will nevertheless dictate to them how their contracts and associations will be run. However, given a variety of factors, this dictatorial control over the medical industry will most likely lead the still privately owned interest into bankruptcy, much like what the federal government has done to the financial and mortgage lending industries. The federal government will most probably take upon ownership as well as control of much of these industries. That's where Obama's communism comes into play. The road to socialism, you say? No, already there. Fascism, already there. But are we on the road to communism? Are we? I've given you examples of how we're already a socialist nation. We've already gone that route. We've already stepped over that. We're already into that. We've been into that since FDR, since Woodrow Wilson. And then FDR expanded upon Wilson's ideas. We have fascism. I've given you examples of that. What's next? All under the mantle of hope and change. Communism. Communism is by and large, in case you didn't know, complete state ownership and control of all industry, wealth, and property, and the means of production. So far, we've seen this from Obama in his leading the charge of confiscation of much of the automobile industry. When he says that car makers must understand the market and stop producing certain types of vehicles, trucks and SUVs, in favor of smaller, more economical vehicles, that the auto industry doesn't understand the market. Ask yourself once again, who is the president of the United States to tell auto industry, automakers, that they don't understand the market? It's not his market for them to understand. These are supposed to be private corporations, private businesses. When the president speaks of companies like the auto industry not understanding the market and that they need to cease building certain types of vehicles, it implies that he is exercising some version of control, or he seeks to gain control of the means of production. Are you with me here? Can I get an amen? Is the president seeking to influence the means of auto production by suggesting that automakers should stop building certain types of vehicles? Think about this. How old are you? How old are you? Are you 20? Are you 30? Are you 40? Are you 50? Whenever, up to this administration, have you ever heard of a president of the United States suggest that a publicly or privately held company should sell one thing over the other, should produce something and stop producing something else? When in your lifetime, if you're within the sound of my voice and you're 50, 60, 70 years old, have you ever heard of such a thing in your whole life? Communism, folks. Once again, I'll give you the definition because it's in my head. It's seared into my head. Communism is complete state ownership and control of all industry, wealth, and property, and the means of production. whether Obama is intentionally implementing a communist America by way of long-planned stealth, as some people have suggested, or whether he has a communist agenda by way of his longtime partnership with admitted terrorist bomber. And small C communist Bill Ayers, or whether Obama follows the teachings of the radical community organizer or commissar Saul Alinsky. It's not important, as Obama's actual actions as president. So far, we have noted that Barack Obama is a socialist. He supports public ownership of the means of production, redistribution of wealth from some segments of society to others. A fascist. We've figured that he is that as well. A fascist. He supports state control over private industry and the means of production in just about every aspect of citizens' daily lives. That's what I'm talking about. Have I convinced you that Barack Hussein Obama is a socialist and a fascist based on his own actions, not my opinion, not through my analysis, but his own actions and his own words? A communist. He supports state ownership as well as control of industry and the means of production. What isn't Obama? Obama is not a capitalist. Barack Obama is not a capitalist because he opposes voluntary exchange, private property rights, voluntary contracts, associations, and markets. Free markets, free of state intrusions and under the rule of law. Now, the true capitalist voluntarily exchange private property systems that coexist with individual liberty. And that's exactly what the American founders believed in. It's the reason they fought the revolution, to have and preserve their posterity. This capitalist system is the only system that exists under the rule of law that protects all individuals in such a society from the theft and trespass of others, including agents of the state. In contrast to that ideal, socialism, fascism, and communism all institutionalize the violation of the rule of law, as they institutionalize the violation of all individuals' inherent right to life, liberty, and the justly acquired property. Their justly acquired property, or justly acquired property. In those totalitarian systems, the individual is the sacrificial animal for the collective. Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. Ayn Rand's book, The Fountainhead. All speak to this issue. Books written in the 40s and 50s, speaking to what we have here, what we have going on this very day. Interesting how things change and stay the same all at the same time. Isn't it interesting, folks, that we're living in very tough times? We're living in a time where folks have elected a president that they believe is the Messiah, that he is above America. He is beyond America. He sets atop, looking down. He's not just a president. He is Daddy Obama. He is the reason why the sun rises and the sun sets. I actually know people who worship the President of the United States of America. I mean worship him. I know people that if I said one cross word to them regarding Barack Obama, our lifelong friendship is over. I have lost friends, family members, over this man, a politician. When I speak ill of Barack Obama for some of my black friends and liberal friends, it's as if I insulted their own mamas. Now, America, we've not experienced true capitalism. No. Not since the U.S. Constitution was written and ratified, and especially not since the presidency of hardcore banking and monetary fascists. Came into power. The choice for America is whether to continue on the road to communism or to turn back, dismantle all of it, and restore our freedoms and prosperity. But who? How? We have leaders who are afraid to tackle issues like Social Security and Medicare, because those hot button issues, those entitlements, go out now to so many voters, that even the mere mention of reforming these entitlement programs could cause an early and unexpected retirement of a congressman or a senator, or even a dog catcher. Do you remember America? Do you remember America before Barack Obama? We're going to take a short break, play a couple of clips, and we'll be right back. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. I remember America. Do you?
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map, but nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, the true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet. Or when certain companies couldn't fail because their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, But in the new millennium, under Bush and Obama, graft, corruption, and crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question Atlas Shrugged that the rest of us were asking 60 years later. Which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? And which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will the regulators bless? And which, in a capricious change of rules, will it condemn or outlaw? As John Galt said in his radio address,
you decided you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value. You've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion.
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. And eventually, they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness and safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged. They might have realized where this was heading.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it? I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
Lights, camera, action. You've been enjoying yourself. But now, it's time to make them love you again. You're cool, calm, collected. You've always gotten what you wanted. But was it ever what we wanted? We need jobs. We need leadership. Yet you do nothing as we pile up debts we can't afford. It's like you don't even get it.
And I'm one of your middle-class Americans. And quite frankly, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted of defending you. Defending your administration, right. Defending the mantle of change that I voted for.
We hope, and you hope.
My hope is,
but hope isn't hiring.
Indeed, hope is not hiring. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. Barack Hussein Obama, socialist. Socialist America, Marxist America, Fascist America. What's next? Communist America? What's next, folks? Where are we headed? Where are we headed? Is anybody concerned? Has it happened to us? Has it happened to us? We've had, throughout history, the Mussolinis, the Stalins, the Hitlers. We've had the great dictators of our time. We've had Americans, not Americans, but we've had those of our time in history fall prey to these charismatic, well-spoken leaders and all of their promises. I discovered a new channel on DirecTV called the Inspiration Channel. Inspiration. If you haven't had an opportunity to check it out, please do so. Over the course of the weekend, I watched the Left Behind series, the LaHaye and Jerry B. Jenkins fictional biblical novels made into movie form. For those of you who don't know what the Left Behind series is about, it's about a charismatic leader who comes out of nowhere, who proclaims himself the savior of all mankind, convinces the world's governments to give up their weapons, to turn over 90% of their arsenals to his one world government, thus ensuring peace at last for all time. Along the way, he proclaims himself to be the Messiah. He's handsome. He's well-spoken. He speaks dozens of languages. He speaks of peace, prosperity for the world. Every man a king. His name is Nicolae Carpathia. He's rich. He's handsome. The ladies love him. Men too. The president of the United States is played by a black man, Lou Gossett. Not that his ethnicity is in any material. Lou Gossett falls under the spell of this charismatic young leader who comes out of nowhere and turns over America itself, along with its arsenal, to Nicolae Carpathia. Later on in the series, Nicolae reveals his true intentions: the one world government, the abolishment of religion, and establishment of a one world religion. No more Christianity, no more Judaism, just a simple, nondescript, one-world religion. Do we see what's happening here today? Where God himself, the word God, the word Christianity is being removed day by day, outlawed, if you will. Military veterans call me up on the phone, complaining to me, Colonel Jones, retired Marine officer of the United States Marine Corps. Sir, I had a young Marine, one of our Marines, come back. A fallen warrior. We sought to pay honor and bury him. In our family plot, in our family cemetery. Just so happens it's a state cemetery. And we were asked, the young Marine said, no, we were told that we could make no reference to God at this particular cemetery. Ask yourselves this question. Why is God being removed from this country? Why is God being shunned? Why is God being banned? Why is the American flag being banned? Why is patriotism being scoffed at and banned here in America? Banned in the USA. Why? Ask yourselves, why? Our country is being dismantled piece by piece. And we do nothing. We do nothing. How many of you call into your congressman? How many of you, when you hear these stories about God being removed from every aspect, crosses, anything representing religion being removed, there's no more Merry Christmas. There's only Happy Holiday. There's not the Christmas season anymore that me and Tesla grew up with and Karen. It's the holiday season. What's happening to us, folks? We need to stand up. We need to rise up. We need to get up. And we need to make it clear to those of us, to those who would remove God and religion and American patriotism from our country forever, before it's gone forever, before there are just a few of us left. We need to stop this. It's got to stop. Otherwise, we're doomed. I want to thank everybody for listening. Coming into the chat room, Tesla, Beach Bomb, Antoinette when she was here, Blog Talk King, all my guests, Gunslinger, Karen, Lynn, Ned King, Pendleton Marines, Republican Marines, my boys, Pendleton, Southern Sense, Tesla, everybody. Thank you. I appreciate you coming in. So many things you could be doing, I've said it many times, other than coming to my chat room and my show, listening. Honor me. I feel honored. Thank you so much for coming in. I do appreciate it. You just don't know how much. We need to start again. We need to start over. Could we start again? Could we? Robert Jones, so the radio report. A wonderful night. Once again, God bless you. God bless America. And God bless the United States Marine Corps. The finest fight.
I think you've made your point now. You've even gone a bit too far to get the message home. Before it gets too frightening, we ought to call a halt. So could we start again, please? I've been living to see you, dying to see you, but it shouldn't be like this. This was unexpected. What do I do now?